Hi, my name is Rick, proud member of Al-Anon.
Rick.
It's very good to be here tonight. I'm also proud to introduce the two speakers. Bruce here is one of my sponsors. I'm in a few programs. I met Bruce here in the rooms at Thursday night, 7 o'clock, Let's Rock. And it's just been an amazing process because I've gotten to work with him throughout the years. When I don't know how to handle something, when I don't know what to say, when I say too much, when I don't know what to think, when I think too much, I know there's somebody I can call who gives me some nice feedback based on the principles of this program. So I've gotten to know him very, very well throughout the years, and I'm very grateful for his friendship. Over that time, I've gotten to meet his beautiful wife, Gita, and I've heard some real kernels of wisdom from her as well as I've heard both of them speak many times. And they've also graciously opened up their home once a month on Fridays so we can practice and learn the traditions. Something I've never really thought about or really read, but now understanding the traditions and the practice of them and how you can apply them throughout your life, I've been very, very grateful and fortunate to be able to attend their home on Friday. So I'd like to introduce the first speaker, Bruce.
Hi, my name is Bruce. And I'm an alcoholic. I'm also a grateful member of Al-Anon. And I'm also an Amius. And for those of you who don't know what an Amius is, it's an Al-Anon member involved in Alateen service. We facilitate meetings. We love our Alateens. We facilitate meetings and events for Alateens. And we love the kids. They're awesome. Yeah, a lot of you guys in the room don't know that I'm an alcoholic. I practice traditions 11 and 12 very carefully, and unless you know, then you don't know. But now you do. So I just broke my own anonymity. But this is, tonight I've been asked to share from the alcohol side, the alcoholic side. So that's what I'll be doing. This is my home group for Al-Anon. Love this meeting, 7 o'clock, Let's Rock. Greatest men's stag meeting in the world. Very proud member of this meeting, so. But I'm gonna do my best to keep it to the alcohol side. However, Al-Anon does weave in and out of my story quite a bit. So after doing lots of work in both programs, I do believe that I was definitely an Al-Anon before I was an alcoholic. So, and I'm gonna leave a good amount of time for my wife because she's got an amazing story. She blows my mind. My favorite speaker of all time. So.
Good job.
And, we have this red and black theme that's all throughout our lives, and even her ring that I designed for her is red and black, and it's a thing. So this is why we're dressed like this, and we'll say that the red's in honor of February, which is the month of love. So we love each other very much. So the alcoholism in my family goes back, way back. I traced it back to my great-grandfather, who my great-aunt was a nun, and she wrote a book. And in the book it says that my great-grandfather wanted to fit in, which was one of my problems when I was a kid. Never felt like I fit in. I had weird feelings about that my whole life. And so what he did is he asked the people in the town in the Midwest, what do I do? They said, well, get your best suit on, go down to the church Sunday morning, we'll meet you there. So he went out and took his last $7 and bought a suit and showed up at the church, and he was the one wearing a suit. And everybody else was wearing bib overalls. And they laughed him out of the church, and he went straight to the saloon, and that was it. And it goes from him down to my grandfather, down to his three sons, my dad's one of them, and down to me. And it completely missed my sister. Don't know why. But that's kind of how it is. It's hit and miss. As they say in the big book, kind of like a tornado. And I had this feeling ever since I was very young, like I said, I didn't fit in. I didn't look like the other kids. You know, I didn't feel like the other kids. Something was off. Something was wrong. And so my earliest memory of taking a drink was when I was 8 years old. I went into my mom's spice cabinet. I scanned the bottles, and the one that had the highest percentage of alcohol for extracts, I grabbed it, cracked it open, and guzzled it. And I continued to drink that exact same way until the day I quit. By the time I was 18, I would have a load of dip in my mouth, smoking a cigar, drinking beer, and drinking Everclear straight out of the bottle, 190 proof straight gain alcohol. And that's, so any alcohol that I had to put in me was the highest percentage I could find. So I drank by the numbers. I drank for effect only. Didn't really like the taste of straight grain alcohol. But I was a blackout drinker, a blackout driver, and a blackout anger guy. And the thing that feared me most was my anger. When that anger comes up and I go past that meter, there's no stopping me. And that's the thing that still scares me today. You know, I'm not perfect. I have some recovery in me, but it's not perfect. So, but anyway, so just real basic thing. We a lot of us alcoholics kind of do most of the same things. We do some blackout drinking. Some of us do some blackout driving. Some of us get kicked out of places. I got kicked out of high school, got kicked out of lots of bars, got kicked out of professional hockey games for fighting, and I was asked by the police, I was escorted to the dock by the police on Catalina Island and asked never to return. That's the kind of alcoholic I am. In addition to that, I'm the kind of alcoholic that can drink 15 iced teas, which is 60 shots, in about 4 hours. Get pulled over driving and pass a field sobriety test. So that's who I really am. Okay. Most of you guys have known me for years, and you're just like, how can you survive? How did you make it? You know, I didn't plan on making it past 30. I was looking to die. I couldn't stand being on this planet. So what I can tell you is, the reason I did all that is, you know, as I found out through lots of step work in both programs, is that I couldn't stand to be who I was. I couldn't stand myself so much that I had to run away as far as I possibly could every time I could. And that's why I logically chose the highest percentage of alcohol. It made sense to me. Blackout was the farthest away I could get away from me. Well, here's what happened. My Al-Anonism kicks in again. And I can't take watching my mom decline. Right, her drinking was affecting me. And my sister and I did an intervention on her. And we said, okay, if you can't stop, you know, we're gonna turn you into this thing. We poured out all our booze. I knew nothing about the do's and don'ts. I knew nothing about if someone's an alcoholic, they can't stop drinking on their own. I had no clue, I was clueless. Of course she couldn't stop drinking. We made the phone call to get her help. Well, the help suspended her license for 3 years, and she had to go to an outpatient program and the whole deal, and she was angry for about a year. And so out of guilt, I started going to family meetings once a week over at that outpatient program. And I guess I caught enough of the disease, the effects of what it does and how it affects your body and mind, and absorbed enough of that through osmosis that I made a decision to maybe quit drinking. It never occurred to me again that I couldn't quit drinking on my own. That thought never occurred to me. And prior to that, I had never ever had the desire to stop drinking because it was working up to that point. Unless you looked at all the relationship problems I had. Relationship after relationship, over and over and over, failure every single time. And, you know, what I was, and again, as a result of a lot of step work, found out that, well, the steps give me three primary relationships. The first you know, first relationships with a higher power. The second is with myself. The third is with others. I had it all backwards. I was going after the third relationship before anything else. I had no clue about who I was. I had no concept of a higher power or spirituality. I had nothing. So I decided to quit drinking. I did what we call white knuckle sobriety for about 2 months. And I thought I was going insane. I thought I was going to have to be locked up somewhere. I was still functional at this point. I was still working, still had a place to live, still had a car to drive, still had a job. So I didn't look like your ordinary, typical alcoholic either. But I guess one night it was so bad that I decided to go to one of these AA meetings they talk about. And so I went, Hermosa Alano Club, Wednesday night, 7 p.m. speaker meeting, and there was this lady speaking from the podium. And there was this glow about her. I don't know what it was, but I wanted that glow. I wanted what she had. And I must have identified as a newcomer, or I must have looked so scared that after she spoke, she ran right up to me and said, "Hey, you know this guy? Do you know this guy?" She started taking me around all these people and introducing me. And so that I felt a little better, and that experiment went so well, I decided to do it again the next Wednesday night, and that's when I met my sponsor, Mike. So this guy was the same guy as me, you know, the blackout drinker, you know, the musician, the guy that got thrown out of every club, you know, that kind of guy, drank like I did. So we had the old parking lot meeting, the meeting after the meeting, one of my favorite meetings, and for 2 hours. I still did not have the courage to ask him to sponsor me. But he told me about a meeting they had in Rolling Hills called a musicians meeting. And it was not for musicians only, but musicians were there, and wow, musicians stay sober? I had no clue about that. And so tried it out. It's a great meeting. I think it's long gone now. I've moved away, but that was good. And at the same time, his sponsor suggested he start a book study around his fire pit at his house because he had so many sponsees. So we started right then. And we started reading the books over and over and over and over. And I struggled. I struggled with, you know, step one, how can I be powerless when I look back over my life and anything I really put my mind to, I could accomplish? How come I can't stop drinking? Didn't understand it. My relationships were clearly unmanageable. That was easy to see. Step two was the killer. That one took me about a year to get over, because I was one of those guys that had a problem with the word God. I thought it was religion. I had no clue that the program is based on spirituality, not on religion. It doesn't matter. I fought with it and fought with it and fought with it. Finally, one day I saw, you know, in chapter four, there it is. I can choose my own conception, and that's what I had to do to get to where I am now. I had to choose something that made logical sense to me, that was a power greater than myself, and it worked. And now I have several different conceptions as a result of step two work in this program that really worked for me. And so it comes time, you know, I'm doing this inventory and all this, it comes time to step five, and here's where I had this guy who had this God problem had what they call in the book a spiritual experience. In Appendix 2, it talks about it. And mine was the sudden revolutionary type. And I dumped all this stuff, so I go to my sponsor's house, and we're you know, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. And it was a nice, we were night guys, we were playing. So, and he taught me about service right away, within 6 months. He always had sober bands, and his drummer left for New York, and he said, "I got a spot. You want it?" I said, "Okay." And he taught me how to be of service. We played as a sober band at conventions all over Southern California, and I still do it to this day with a band up north. So I laid all this stuff out on the table. We had a good omelet. That was good. And it was time to go. And it's 4 a.m. in Lomita. There was no sound. Everything was, the air was perfectly still. I was on the steps of his porch. He was in the doorway. And he says, "It's going to be okay." I said, "All right." And then he said, "No, really, it's going to be okay." And I said, "Okay." And just then, this gust of wind from out of nowhere blew his wind chimes. I looked at the chimes. I looked at him. He said, "It's going to be okay." And I said, "I'm out of here." I took off. I got in my truck. I started driving home. It was a 4-mile drive. The Wind Cries Mary was playing, Jimi Hendrix. So I had the Jimi Hendrix spiritual experience. And I was driving. I was probably about 2 years sober at the time. Don't really quite remember. But the streetlights were changing rainbow colors. It was going rainbow on me. And I'm telling you, at 2 years sober, I was having a full-blown mushroom trip. And it blew my mind. I got home. I laid down. And I looked at the sixth step and laid there and thought about what I'd done. And for the first, what I felt like is I felt super light, almost like I was levitating. It was like the strangest thing that ever happened in my life. And I got this feeling, and my whole life was feeling problems. You know, I learned that I was very sensitive and very emotional through a lot of step work. And this feeling that I got that came over me as a result of this step work was that if I were to die at this moment, I could finally die happy and at peace. So that step work gave me my first amazing promise of peace. And it's been great ever since, except for some low spots, as we heard earlier. Life goes up and down. It's not perfect. So, I had this experience. I liked it. Kept doing it. Kept doing step work. You know, got through this process, being of service all the time. But still, at the, you know, with my sponsor direction and his path. You know, watching him doing exactly what he did. I didn't know what to do. My best thinking got me in these 12-step rooms, these 12-step programs. So if my best thinking got me here, I better get some literature to change my thinking around and follow that instead of this. So that's my logic for how I work with others. I don't give my opinion. I give whatever's in the literature, and that's what it is. Because it's tried, true, and tested, right? So on through the years, and some things that, you know, have happened. It's another important thing that happened. So I did this for a long time. 15 years I was at that fire pit, studying, working with other guys, doing service work, doing what I gotta do to stay. And the funniest thing happened. I was down to maybe one meeting a week, and the thing I didn't see was that my ego was coming up behind me. Because when I'm down, see, I'm a guy who needs, and that's another thing I need to know what I need. I'm a guy who needs at least 3-4 meetings a week to survive. Well, to be fairly sane, put it that way. I can survive on one, but I mean, I ain't very pretty. Ask my wife. And so she met me. This is funny. So here comes this ego, because I'm only going to one meeting a week. So for me, what happens is there's a spirituality bar graph, right? There's 5 things I really need to do to keep in. And the first one is working with a sponsor. Second is working with sponsees. Third is how many meetings a week do I need? Fourth is literature, book studies. And fifth is service work. When those are all firing and I'm doing what I gotta do, my spirituality bar is pretty high up. Well, when I'm not doing maybe one of those, or maybe 2 or 3, and maybe going to one meeting a week, boom, that's when all these other things, the fears, the anger, all the other stuff comes up, the ego. And that's what happened. I never saw it. And so I decided it was time to go on tour and be a rock star, and I went and did that. And for 2 years, I went to maybe 4 meetings in those 2 years and never took a trip. I would not recommend that if you're an alcoholic. It was dangerous. At the end of that, I was spinning around just like I was a newcomer again. Luckily, I guess I had enough foundation to not take a drink in those 2 years. But that's when I met my wife, and she saw me spinning out. And I knew I had to get back to program, so I deserted it. And so I dove back in when I met her and moved up to where we live now. And another God shot. I've had a zillion God shots in my life that happened to me. I walked into this place thinking they might have I think it was a 12 and 12 shop or something like that. Hopefully they have a directory. I don't know. I saw a little circle and triangle in the window. Go in there, and the guy's like, "Hey, what's going on?" I was like, "I'm looking for a directory." He said, "Sit down. We're starting a meeting right now." It was a Monday, 2 o'clock, and it wasn't listed in any directory. So I have a second AA sponsor. The first one worked really well, and he still does to this day. I love the man. I still see him all the time. But I wanted to make sure that when I moved 60 miles from my home, I had somebody else to be accountable for. So I have 2 AA sponsors. And for me, I don't care if I have 25, whatever it takes. We started doing the fire pit thing around his place, kind of the same way. And now there's a group of guys up there that, there's 25, 30 guys every Sunday. And a lot of them have been sober for a good, 7 to 10 years and stuck around. Unfortunately, as a sponsor, I've had to bury people that I've worked with, some people that have turned completely around with their lives and made amazing recoveries, and then for whatever reason, did the same thing I did, let the meetings slip down. It's almost the most common thing out here in meetings. You let the amount of meetings slip down, and here it comes again. The disease comes right up on you. And it's unfortunate. But that's the nature of this disease. So there's those 5 things I got to do to keep myself in good spiritual shape. Because no matter how much time I get, the world record of sobriety for me is 24 hours. Period. You got to remember that. I'm this close to my next drink, an arm's length. So the other thing that I do is in the big book. So if you have a third edition, it's page 452. If you have a fourth edition, it's page 420. So out of that page, there's the most asked question in program. How do I know what God's will is for me? Right? It tells you right on that page. So it's toward the bottom, the last third of the page. And then the other thing that I get out of that, about right in the middle of the page, is kind of something for daily living for me as an alcoholic. And as an Al-Anon, I will take what it says in there, and so I use a formula. Numbers work for me. I think in binary, decimal, and hexadecimal all day long. So what I get out of that is, if I can keep close to these percentages, I'm usually doing pretty well on a daily basis. The first one is 100% surrender to some sort of a power greater than myself, whatever that is. I have to start my day like that. It's mandatory for me, because this takes off and spins. Number 2, 100% acceptance of the world being exactly as it's supposed to be. The temperature in our house at night has been down to 26, 28 lately. It's been a little cold, but that's the temperature it is supposed to be, period. If I think it's supposed to be different, guess what? I'm back, right back on page 62, playing God again. I'm playing God. I'm thinking something should be different than it actually is. That's my ego coming back. My ego is out to kill me. It's doing push-ups in the corner, just waiting. So 100% acceptance, 100% surrender, 0% expectations. Expectations are going to kill me. If I, again, back to the thing, if I expect them to act a certain way, they might not be capable of that behavior today. That's me playing God again, saying they should act a certain way. Can't do that. That's going to kill me. That's the ego coming back one more time. And finally, the last one is ego, 0% ego. Because it's killing me. Killing me on a daily basis. I got to take it, I got to throw it on the ground, and I got to step on it and crush it like a cigarette butt. Because I've been to hundreds of funerals. Hundreds. A few sober, a lot of them not. It's a deadly disease, you know. And for the Al-Anons in the room, we don't want to be bad people. We don't want to ruin your life. We drink because we have to. We drink because we're so miserable and we can't stand ourselves so much. We have to have some kind of medicine to be able to survive life. That's me as an alcoholic. All the things I just said are my opinion, of course. But it's just, I've spoken to lots of alcoholics and known lots of them. This is what we do. You know, this program works. These 12-step programs are a miracle. They saved my life. I did not plan on living past 30. I'm really glad that the programs are here. But this, as a result of this, I've got a life beyond my wildest dreams. Mind-blowing things that have happened to me. I've come from pretty much nothing to a life that's amazing. I'm very, very grateful for this life. And it's been a lot of hard work, but it's been totally worth it. This life has allowed me to have successful relationships today with all the men in this room and women that I see in different meetings around. And an amazing relationship with my family, my wife, daughters. That's the big miracle. And, you know, as you heard, we do work traditions in our home. My wife's probably going to share some about that. And that's what's really made our family solid. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my favorite speaker of all time, my wife, Gita.
I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I'm so grateful I'm part of this miracle family. And the reason I do that because at the break, I'm going to run to the bathroom, and this is how my life works, always in a hurry. And she got up, she's going to give me a hug, I'm just going, shoo. I did not even feel it. When I came back, another guy said, hey, Gita. And I just, shoo. I walk back and give him a hug, and I said, sure, that's why I'm keep coming back, because I keep doing the same thing all the time. So here I am. I don't have plan to leave. You probably see me around campus a lot longer. So when I first met my husband, so he told me he's an alcoholic. I said, no, you are not. Because I know better what an alcoholic looks like and what they do. And he said, yes, honey, I am an alcoholic. And and he told me in AA what he do and stuff. And I said, okay, I still don't believe that, but you can go to the meeting and do whatever you need to do to fix yourself so you can be perfect. Because in my thinking that I'm already perfect. If he work himself, he can be perfect. We will have perfect marriage and we will have perfect family. So that my attitude growing up in my whole entire life. Nothing I did, always somebody else did it to me. You know, I'm the good one, everybody else always screw up. And so he do his thing, even though I say that, But I realized that this is like, I realized later after I'm in the program and work through the steps, every time he be of service, he hang out with those people, I always make a big deal. Like as soon as he arrived at the meeting, I text him, this happened, you need to fix this, the water leaking, and on and on and on and on. I don't know why it's always happened when he in a meeting. It just happened. So I realized that because that is my life too. I want it all and I want it all for myself. I don't want to share anything with anybody. So he's my husband, I'm not gonna share with his friend who always spend time doing things, I don't know what they're doing. And so he go to the meeting doing the thing and I'm just like, no, thank you, but no thank you. We have our life, you know, but the first 4 years of our life together, if you believe that hell on earth is real, you can ask him. Because my behavior is so poorly. First, I don't believe he's an alcoholic. I don't believe that alcoholism is the disease. I think alcoholism is an asshole. That's what I think. Because how can I believe alcoholism is the disease? Because for me, if you don't want to drink, just don't pick up the drink, period. No more discussion, we don't have to talk about it. But that is because of me. And you know, I realized that it's just, I don't know. I don't know when people say, you know, when you hear about alcoholics, they lose everything, they're going crazy and they're doing all kind of stuff, they got thrown out of the bar. I am as Al-Anon, non-treated, no drinking, not using drug. I got thrown out of the bar, kicked out of the hotel, kicked out of the taxi, handcuffed and sit in the back of police car. Everything is my behavior only. Dry, never drink, no influence. My spinhead only. Because I thought everybody life, whatever people in my life, what they do, reflecting as who I am. That's why I try to control them, make them the way that I think that they should live their life, what they should wear, how they should carry by themselves, what school they should do, what kind of job they should be, so they can make me proud and I can be as a whole person. And you know, we live our life, and the motivation for me that coming to this program, that because when we met, he have one daughter and I have one daughter. So my stepdaughter, she started doing things that I think she should be doing. And like everybody in the room, I would like to hear if someone say, my life is so good, that's why I come into the Al-Anon. Same thing. I walk into this room as a last resort. I run out all the tricks in my pocket. I have done everything, try to fix her. So I came into the room, just thought I can get the quick answer. I heard a lot of wisdom, and my mother-in-law said, you should go to the Al-Anon and stuff. I just said, no. But finally I came, and the first question I asked in my first meeting is, how can I fix my people? And the lady was so sweet. You just keep coming back, honey. I said, no, you don't understand. I have no time to keep coming back. I just need the answer. And I promise you, if you give me the secret, I'll be out of here. You will never see my face again. And she said, well, you just have to keep coming back. I'm here 25 years and I don't even know how it works. I said, you here 25 years, you don't know how this thing works? And you tell me to keep coming back. I'm just like, oh my God. You can ask people in Santa Clarita. I was angry and came into the room. I'm very angry. That's another miracle I found out when I walked through the step. I don't know how to deal with my own feelings. All I know is just push it down. Because when I feel my own feelings, I'm a weak person. That's my perception. So I keep pushing it down and push it down and push it down. But it's overflow. It's just too full. It's leak out as an anger. The only thing I know is I'm being angry and angrier. And so when I came to the meeting, so I doing the deal, you know, faking it for the first 6 months. I'm working on the step, do whatever you share in the room, because I still don't believe this. But I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And the situation at home got so bad. So, and this is, you know, me and my husband, I know I love him, but I hate him at the same time. I don't know how to treat him as a human. He was so sweet every day. I dropped the kid off at school. This is when our house going crazy. Our stepdaughter, my stepdaughter is just doing her thing. I'm going crazy. I dropped him off. I'm doing thing. He always called me around 10, 11 before his break and just, hey, honey, how are you doing? And the conversation going sweet, just like normal couple. Within 15 minutes, it start going downhill. And every single time, he ended up asking me, honey, how did we come out like this? And I ended up crying because he did it to me. He did not love me. He did not be nice to me. It's his fault. And he called me every day. He still called me to make sure I'm okay. And I realized that it's just like, wow. So when I come into the program, I start working the step, working the tradition, doing the concept. But this time I realized that, you know, I'm just like, I have to do this for me because faking this thing is not gonna work. I saw the joy of you guys. I saw a couple, I saw a family, I saw the kid, they are happy. And I just like, okay. So I feel like my life is run by fear. And I keep running and running and running and running. I don't know what I'm running away from. And I realize that I'm running away from myself. I feel like I'm to the point that I'm the edge of the cliff. I have two choices. I can keep running and jump over the cliff, or I can turn around and face my own problem. Thanks God, I have one foot in the room. Even though I don't get much, but I got tiny little grip of that wisdom. So I just turn around, I working the step, doing the tradition and the concept. I got the real sponsor, not the fake one that I used to share in the room. And right away that my sponsor put me into a service. You know, I used to call her, oh my God, he did this, and that, and no, and my stepdaughter doing that. I said, hey, Jita, I'm going to the meeting of the this and this and this. Meet me at my house and we go. So, oh, how is this gonna fix my problem and my people? But I go because I don't know how to say no. I don't want her to not like me. And we go to the meeting, go to be of service somewhere. Every time I call, she just like, hey, I'm doing this. I'm just like, God, did she have a life? She always like doing this, doing that. But that has saved my life. Because when I go being of service, I got to see different people. And most of the time when we get together, we talk about recovery in the program. So, and you know, our life is still not that good. I'm still treat my husband just like second class people. Because if you love me, you do everything for me. And silent treatment, if you love me, you should know what I want, even though I don't tell you. And, you know, it just, that's how I grew up. That's how I know. That's how my mom treat my dad. And my dad, when I grow up, I always hear that, let's make mom happy. Let's make mom happy. Now I have husband. The kid should tell dad that, let's make mom happy. That's how I learn. So, I was just everything. He go to the AA, and this is he never noticed before. I used to follow him to the meeting. And when I see that woman in AA walk out, and when they hug, I was just like grabbing that steering wheel, and I just said, that bitch. That's my husband. And when I come home, it would be a fight. I can pick anything and pick a fight with him. I can even pick that when he in first grade, he told me that he had crush with his Japanese teacher, and I wasn't born yet. I'm 7 years younger than him. I can bring that up and we have a big fight. But you know, I walking through the step, my self-esteem is not zero. It's minus 100. It's under the ground. It's burying somewhere. But when you see outside of me, I'm very confident. I have a good job. I do everything. I'm just all together. But my self-esteem is not. And he used to tell me that, thanks God he have AA program. Because he used to tell me that my heart is bigger than your head and your fear. And of course I got angry. What is the fear? What is the head? I'm not afraid of anything. And today I understand. I understand what that meant. You know, I'm very good with getting all the information. I'm very good to put you in a corner and get the lies out of you. But then I don't know what to do with that information. I don't have the tools. All I can know is I born with a weapon in my mouth, which is my tongue. I can say the nasty thing, but can kill you. And you know, that's how I treat my husband. And I look, now I understand. I allow my past, what I have been through, to control me, how to treat my today life. What I've been through before. So I look at him like he's gonna meet another man. And what men do? They lie, they cheat, they steal, whatever. They do that. But I have to remember that he is who he is. He not like another man. And I just keep treating him like that. And the kids was so scared of me. Holiday, I don't know how you survived that. Holiday in my house before I walk into the room of Al-Anon. Any holidays. The kid, two girls, and daddy would be in the other room. And every time I would see the head come out like this. And when I look, they disappear. Because I was angry all the time. And I remember the very first year in the Al-Anon, I have 6 months in the program. And Christmas, the kid, and we're gonna decorate the tree. And the night at night, and the same thing. All the time, I was so unhappy and yelling and screaming and all kind of stuff. And the girl was in one corner. And Bruce is on one corner. And I said, fine. Because I heard in the room, just fake it. Fake it until you make it. For some reason, I remember that. I just said, okay, fine. I'm just tired. I'm going to go to sleep. So I went to bed. I never sleep. Because I have to watch my people like a hawk. It's like, I have to know what they do. So I went to bed. But I realize now, God probably do for me what I cannot do for myself. I fell asleep at 10 p.m. until 8 a.m. Never wake up. So I woke up. I walked straight to the Christmas tree. And it's right there and the oldest girl room there. So I walked there and all of a sudden I can hear something like three head like this. And look at the Christmas tree. And I remember from the meeting the day before. It's just like, for something, I remember something, and I take a deep breath, and I turn, and they disappear. And I walk into the room, there are three of them together, sitting together like that. And I say, the tree is not that bad. In that moment, I finished that sentence. Three of them were screaming, yelling, laughing, jump up and down. Like they were so happy. They do things right. And that moment when I found out, this is what I want my family to be. And why I always treat my loved one who always there for me badly. But you know, working through the step, I realized that the fifth step, it just changed my perception and my life so much that past is a past. I cannot plan the future. I can enjoy this moment of my life. Every day today, I try my best to live the life like today is the last day of my life. What if I don't wake up tomorrow? I used to get upset. I'm gonna go sleep at the other room. And if he come and, honey, I'm so sorry. Sorry is not enough. You're not really feel sorry. Come into the room, get in the bed. No, no. And I just like, I'm looking for one word that he say and take that and twist it and turn it so I can kill him with my verbal abuse. And then he changed. He not come and get me. Oh my gosh. I was like. But if he come in and get me, and what gonna happen? Gonna be the same thing happen and happen and happen. And you guys are so right. And that lady is so right. I cannot change other people. I can change myself. You know, today I try not to be that way. I'm not perfect, but I can ask for what I want. I can tell him what bothers me. At home, like the 12th tradition is our house rule. We have two girls and four of us all together. It doesn't matter whether you're 15 or you're 50. You have the same equal voice. I am no longer the boss in the house. I am no longer the authority in the house. I am no longer make decision in the house. The only authority is God. I have to remember that everybody have their own higher power. And it's not me. What I have to do that with our stepdaughter, I still have to put her in my hand and hand it to God. Say, here, God, you take it. Because you know what to do with it, with her and situation. I don't. Every time I put my hand on something, I make it worse. That's what I'm capable and very good at. So I have to turn, you know, like step three, turn my life and my will. I have to remind myself everybody's life and wills too, not only me. So with that, you know, we have a happy family. It's not perfect. I would like to say my family is perfect, still up and down. My husband is still alcoholic, but he doesn't drink. But doesn't mean he's not an alcoholic. I really believe that alcoholism is the disease. When I walk into this room, I wish them to die. It doesn't matter. I have sister who are like very deep in the disease. And I found out that I have all kind of family trail that is drunk. My grandpa drunk. My grandma probably killed him. That's still like mystery. I still try to find out. He'll come home drunk and my grandma always beat him up every night. So I still don't get the answer from my parents, so they pass away. And alcoholics do what alcoholics do. I am as Al-Anon with non-treat, I do what Al-Anon do. I will hunt them down, I will do anything, I try to straighten them up. But today, I have the tools. Because I don't have tools. I feel like I was born without a service manual. Today, I do. I have the toolbox with me. I, in here, I have just a little bit of program. I have it enough to carry myself to the day, every day. All I have to do is open that toolbox and grab one of the tools and use it. And, you know, for me, it's so easy for me to slip into my old behavior. But what I can do today, what I have to do, I have to go to 4 Al-Anon meetings a day. And I also, but this is me, go to the open AA meeting. I learn about alcoholism in the literature toward it. And I have to be observant. It's a big part of my recovery. You know, I heard when people say, when you get busy, you get better. You know, be observant is a very big part of my recovery. And, you know, I'll be observant in the group and out of the group. And all of a sudden that I be part of the board member on the AIS, and all of a sudden I be in a part of the world service, and I'll freak out. And I call my sponsor, and she said, "Jita, are you speak English?" I said, "A little." And she said, "You read English? You can read?" I said, "Yeah, a little." And she said, "Can you write? Can you email?" I said, "Yeah, a little bit." "Then you can do it." And I'm so glad that, you know, shout out for Alateen. And AAEC, meaning that Area Coordinator Alateen event. As if you are all AMIAs, you will know that when you heard about that word, everybody like, because it used to be 20 pages long with legal stuff. And they expect Alateen to fill out that form and pass to and get the event approved. But you know what? Let it begin with me, with my a little bit of English, but my willingness is very, like, big. So we get it together with our Alateen coordinator group. We come out with 7 pages of the Alateen event plan. Simple. You just read it. You just fill out all the information, set it in. That's it. Anything for Alateen, I will do it. Because our younger daughter, she affected so much by my behavior, not by her sister doing anything. She told me all the time. So, what time I have until? 8:30? Okay, time up. So anyway, that's why I do anything for Alateen, because my younger daughter, who affected so much in high school, she was like depressed. And she cannot even, like, almost got kicked out of high school. But I come into the Al-Anon, she found the Alateen. Her, all of a sudden, her life is bright and shine. She got into the college that her dream. She got a scholarship to go teach in Thailand from government. She got, right now she's in London studying abroad. She got the scholarship to intern in DC last year. All I can say is, the power of mom letting go. All of a sudden, she just blossomed. And you know, our life today, what we do, we just apply all the program in our area. And I love my husband, and I even thanks him, that thank you for being an alcoholic and being in the recovery, because I got to find my miracle family. My family is just you guys. And this is, I have a dad in here, I have a mom in here, I have sister, I have a brother. It just, family for me doesn't have to be blood anymore. We spend all the holiday with our family in here. It doesn't matter if you're new or you're here for a while, you haven't seen the miracle, just keep coming back. Miracles is right there in front of you. Only thing you have to do is get out of the way of your higher power, and miracle will come to you. Thank you.